the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers Arizona Cardinals. It's been a couple of weeks. Seth Cox is with me from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And, my goodness, it's been a hot minute since we've been doing stuff. It's summertime. Not that there's been much to talk about. But Seth, how have you been taking, you know, the time off? Although this is tough content time.
Yeah, just busy. I mean, football still 5 nights a week, and so it's been a hot, quiet break in terms of like you said, content. But real life keeps you busy and keeps you moving forward, and so we'll see how that goes as we get into the busier season. I mean, we've got about 3 weeks left till things actually start to heat up, while we, you know, get to the start of training camp.
Yes, and that we will talk about a little bit of training camp. We've got the schedule coming out, but some content came upon us, and in this edition of the show, we're on episode 546. Seth and I are recording, obviously, this show. I'm gonna record another with Howard Balzer to talk more about Kyler Murray later on in the week, as that has been the topic of conversation. And that is, it seems like after all the positive vibes, everything positive this offseason, best offseason ever, Kyler says, it really seems on the outside that one of two things has happened. Either the organization finally is all in on Kyler and have stopped talking about things that were concerned, or two, if those concerns were real, he's kind of gotten over them. But Colin Cowherd on his podcast brought up a concept, and for Cardinals fans, you're probably tired of hearing it. It's the whole video game thing, and it comes back, and it's about the notion that Cowherd, who is chummy with Steve Keim, who has contacts around the league, he said that he's talked to a lot of people around the league, and the general consensus about Murray is no way out. Like the entire league is out on Kyler Murray. And he points to kind of something he goes to, talks about the therapist that talks about the issue with gaming and gamers, how video gaming, how gaming in general is, it tends to be bad for marriages. And, you know, there's a stigma that follows it. And he says, he's accurate. He's a playmaker. He's got a poorly owned franchise to the playoffs in a tough division. I think the gaming thing is a huge stigma. I think older GMs look at it and say, Jesus, throw the F up. Like, this guy's addicted to gambling. And he talks a little bit more as well. He says, quarterback people says he's the best high school football player ever. He wins the Heisman. He gets Arizona to the playoffs. The fans don't like him. The media doesn't like him. Execs don't like him. His owner doesn't like him. I've never seen a player this talented. Nobody's saying be patient. People just bailed on him. And he says, my take on Kyler is he's the most talented quarterback in my life that has no support group. And he points to Jordan Love. He didn't even play for 3 years. He was terrible in September in his fourth year. And everyone's like, give him time. And it's weird that this comes up. I honestly, I don't know why Colin brought it up in the first place. I recall it. The context is because Craig Morgan, a guy that we all know quite well from his time around reporting in the Valley, mostly hockey. He's done all the other sports. He just joined the Phoenix PHNX and had an interview with Bruce Arians, who talked about Kyler Murray and said kind of the jury's still out. He's still in the Valley, and brought up concerns that Arians typically does. And he talks about it. He didn't say anything bad about Kyler other than the fact, well, you know, guys that use their legs, it comes to a point where they have to use their brain and the arms. Is that kids Murray going to be able to do that? And that's kind of what brought this up. How surprised were you, Seth? What did you take away from the comments and then the conversation that has come since then?
I think a lot of it is just that people put expectations out there. And then if they're not met right away, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to discard this guy. And a lot of it comes down to a couple things, like you said. You know, there is still a stigma around black quarterbacks. I mean, let's be honest, there still is. We've seen people still criticizing Lamar Jackson after winning two MVPs because, well, he's, you know, never made a Super Bowl because it's the easiest thing ever. I mean, let's,
especially since it's just been Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. Guys, stop it.
Yeah, and, you know, so we get that. You get, you know, you've got guys criticizing now, you know, Justin Herbert, who's been one of the most successful young quarterbacks in the history of the NFL from a statistical standpoint, because, again, like, well, why aren't you winning games? You know, like, how do you put up all these numbers but you never actually win? And you're like, okay, well, I mean, I guess, like... And then, you know, you have the other side of the coin where you've got, you know, Kirk Cousins, who people dislike, and all he does is put up stats and win games. And it's like, but he's not. And so I just think that the quarterback position, more than probably any in all of sports, is the easiest to criticize. And when people don't like or agree with how somebody behaves, whether it's on the field or off the field, then it becomes like, oh, well, this or this or this, and that becomes kind of who they are, and that becomes basically all that's thought of them. You know, for Kyler, I think he came into the league, played really well, and then had some issues, but he never really, like, he's never bombed, right? Like, even his bad season was, when you look at it from that...
It was average, right?
Right. It was very average. Like, you've never looked at him and gone, ugh, like...
Comparatively, take a look at Josh Dobbs when he was bad. Josh Dobbs right. bad was a horrific... Like, there's lots of young quarterbacks, when you go back over the years, you look at their low end, their floor play, and it is... Abysmal. Like, guys, we go back to Blaine Gabbert, you know, 15 years ago, 13 years ago. There were times he looked like he didn't know how to play football on the field. And he turned into a very, very, very successful NFL career as a backup. But, like, when he was first playing that rookie year, there were things you're like, does he even know how to play football? And you never got that from Murray X, aside from the frustration in the playoff game against the Rams. There are a couple of plays, but those are the same, like, Matthew Stafford had. Remember that ill-advised end zone throw that got picked off and returned for a touchdown? Matthew Stafford's done the exact same thing too, and he's, you know, one of the greatest ever, they say.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, there's things that stick with people, or like you said, there are times when people get, basically, they're done. From the sense of, like, hey, we're never going to change our thoughts on you, right? Like, this is who you are. This is what we're always going to think of you. And I think we're seeing that, you know, with Kyler in a lot of ways, because there are still people that bring up, well, you know, the Rams playoff game. It's like, so like,
have you seen Peyton Manning's first playoff games? Peyton Manning was bad in those. But for me, the takeaway was this. I did not view any, like, personally, as I was listening to the comments after the fact, and people are talking about this tired take. I didn't, you know, Colin didn't have the tired take. He was commenting about the perception of Murray around the league and among executives. And we've talked about that on this show. People don't like Kyler. Like, we're not talking about people in general. We're talking about, like, general managers. There was something going on behind the scenes in the organization which led to that slander that came out, you know, before the Super Bowl. He's a finger pointer. He's a bad leader. He's got bad study habits. Obviously, we've got the study clause and the contract. And when Colin says something, the fans don't like it. We've seen that. There were a number of players. There are a number of fans that just, like, we've seen this pocket of fans who have never accepted Kyler. The media doesn't like him. You know, we've got crotchety old media members who critique the way he is. Execs don't like him. Steve Keim apparently, Steve Keim, I think, tolerated him. Michael Bidwell says his owner doesn't like him. We've never heard anything from Michael Bidwell to suggest that. However, the fact that he put that study clause in makes it seem like he was reacting to things that might or might not have been true. The idea is, for some reason, Kyler has come into the league without, like, as exciting as he is, like, the 30-plus crowd. They don't love Kyler. He's too short. He's a midget. He doesn't take things seriously. And a lot of it is because he doesn't talk the way like Tom Brady or Carson Palmer, or like guys that stand up in the media and are then affable. Kyler doesn't, like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what players, he doesn't care what the adults think. He's wildly popular amongst the young people, and it shows in how he treats young people. They matter to him. But, like, he will bristle at questions he's been asked a million times. He brushes off questions, and he comes across as a sore loser sometimes. There's been many quarterbacks that have been like that before, but it's just, I think it's been a case of expectation. A guy like Kyler, and he took heat because he plays video games a lot. He was part of the FaZe Clan, 3 years ago. Although I'll say that I haven't heard anything about his gaming in a couple of years. There's been nothing. And so they have, like, oh, Call of Duty this, and there was the analytics they did when there was something new dropped on Call of Duty, how his play dropped like that. But it's just because he was so highly touted. And even though, like, the offense he was playing in, people criticized the offense, and yet they still made it to the playoffs. Because he hasn't won games consistently, and two, his statistical things, we haven't gotten those video game production. Like, we've been waiting for it. Like, Kyler's the type of guy where we figure, we believe, could be a 5,000 total yards guy, could rush for 1,000, throw for 4,000 or some combination of that, where he could put up 5,040 touchdowns, 5,000 combined yards, 40 touchdowns year after year, kind of like the Patrick Mahomes. And he hasn't done that. His numbers, his efficiency numbers are great, but his volume numbers are very average. He took the Cardinals to the playoffs. They were terrible in that playoff game. And I think it's those two things. He has neither shown that he's a consistent winner in the NFL because his teams have been awful. And two, he hasn't put up mad numbers, and he hasn't, and that's kind of the thing that's holding him back for perception. Although he's proving to be a quarterback, he doesn't give a flip about numbers. He's capable of doing it, but he just wants to win games.
Right, and that's the hard part, right? Like, people don't love that he's not.
He can be like Patrick Mahomes, but he isn't a Patrick Mahomes, and so people are expecting Patrick Mahomes numbers.
Well, and people get I think you said it before, like, they get kind of weird when he doesn't kind of go with what they expect or want, right? Like, when he does his own thing and doesn't necessarily play the game the way that they expect it to be played. And I'm talking about off the field. Like, it's something that doesn't endear him to people. And that bothers, especially old head media, right? Like, they just... they want guys that I don't know how to explain it. They don't always enjoy the way Kyler behaves or what, or his aloofness or the fact that he's not, you know, he's not the media darling for them, or, you know, or he does push back, or he does kind of scoff at them. And so it's just an interesting thing, because it's weird to see a guy that's never had really any issues not be embraced like he hasn't been, right?
And I will say this, Arizona's really bad about this. Arizona sports in general. Let's look at some of the top picks and how they were never fully embraced. Now, Kyler got himself paid, so good for him. DeAndre Ayton went through the exact same thing for the Phoenix Suns. If you go back a decade to the Arizona Diamondbacks, Justin Upton, all productive players, but being number one picks, they didn't live up to their savior status. And fans here, especially, if you don't live up to these whatever expectations that there are, they'll turn on him. You know, they'll turn on him. Like, how many top people thought we should bail out on Kyler after that playoff loss? Like, we've been consistent in saying that the success that the Cardinals had, all the success that the Cardinals had under Cliff Kingsbury, we can give Kyler the credit for that success. I think that's fair to say, is that, and the games when Colt McCoy started and they were efficient and things like that. Just understand this: the reason why the quarterback, with the issues they had in the front office, the coaching staff, Kyler elevated this team. It was the offense was Kyler, please do something for us. And yet, and then he needed a top receiver. He needed a DeAndre Hopkins to be dynamic. But it's been the Kyler show on offense, and you look at the efficiency numbers without him, you know, what they were doing before. And the injury set him back, obviously, but I think the injury did numbers for that adversity, changed things for him personally. And whether it was just the timeliness of his age, he has now fully embraced everything about the quarterback role. And he just wasn't ready emotionally to do that, because he's not a super quote. Now he fully feels like he's a vocal leader, rather than just, you know, vibing with the top guys like the Zach Ertz's and the James Conner and the DeAndre Hopkins on the team and the Christian Kirks. He's now reaching out to all team members. He's leading all team members. And, you know, I always theorize this. They didn't coach him. Like, when they brought him in the league, the way the Cardinals handled him, the result that we got is a lot of their fault, because the coaching staff didn't, they did. Larry Fitzgerald kind of hinted at this at one point privately in a conversation, that basically he got the red carpet, which was fine because he was a quarterback. But I always felt that Cliff Kingsbury was like, he was thrilled to have Kyler after years of coveting and recruiting, and he finally had him. And the type of coach he was wouldn't push him, wouldn't say, hey, I want this out of you. Kyler is used to being coached hard. Jonathan Gannon has been a godsend for him, because his brand of coaching, the things that he demands, the expectations, is exactly what Kyler needed, and it's bringing him into his own. And so I agree with the fact that with Cowherd, it's a stigma. It's the stigma. It's nothing about Kyler himself that is actually real, that is about his reputation. It's about the stigma. People, you know, people hate video games. You can't be successful if you're a gamer. Come on, guys. Every NFL player plays video games. Because the gaming we experienced as young people was so different. We played games by ourselves, or someone had to come over and play with us. It's a completely different world. Video gaming is a social thing now that is common. It's big business. But yeah, it's more stigma than anything else. It's nothing about Kyler and his personality. It's just that facet about him from 3 years ago is just sticking around, and I think it'll carry on with him to some degree until one of two things happens: the winning or the mad statistics.
Right. And I think the other thing is that we, you know, overlook at times is that, like you said, the whole video game stigma, things like that. And I know it's a different sport and things like that, but I mean, most of the NBA, they smoke weed.
Yes, they do.
A very high percentage of NFL players smoke weed. And so it's not always the stigma that it once was of like, oh, well, he's a, you know, he's a pothead, so he's just lazy, right? Like that's, and so, but I think that people look at, like you said, the release of things and they're like, oh, look, he doesn't play as well when this releases. So obviously he's playing too much attention to video games and not enough. And then the homework clause, that was always just such a weird, you know.
And it was like, that's Michael Bidwill, you know, trying to stick something into a contract, he reacting to a perception. I'm like, who really thought that in 3 years, two Pro Bowls, a rookie of the year, that this kid wasn't studying? Because
right, exactly.
If he wasn't and he was playing, and wow, just look at what he did. Look at what he did. That's absurd. That's absurd.
Right, exactly.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. We're going to move on to talk a little bit more about Kyler Murray, but in a better sense. Dark Horse MVP. That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. Kyler Murray in the news for, you know, stigma. But there's a good one, and this comes from NFL.com's Judy Batista, published a couple of days ago on Monday, and she gave 8 Dark Horse MVP candidates, and that included none other than the Cardinals' Kyler Murray. There was a while back, like when we first saw MVP odds, when the futures odds first came out from the different sports books, and Kyler at 50-1, we said, hey, that's a really good bet. Because of a number of things. One, just value. You get good value for someone who's a quarterback, because quarterbacks win MVPs, who, you know, in years, we've seen MVP-level play. He's in the second year of an offense, you know, and the way he played down the stretch, you're like, this would be a good value pick. I'm not saying Kyler Murray winning MVP would be amazing. Because if the Cardinals, it would mean, if Kyler Murray were the MVP, it would mean the Cardinals were having an amazing season. That said, I totally buy him as a dark horse candidate because the offense looks like it could be good. And he's all in on this offense and this team. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and it looks like you said, that he's in a different mindset with this group, and it seems like he's more engaged and that they're more engaged as a group, which is, I think, one of the things that people missed about the previous things is that there was a little dissension and or everybody wasn't on the same page. There was some selfishness and out for me that we saw under the last regime. So this one where everybody's kind of buying in and, you know, Bruce Arians said as much on that podcast, that was super interesting to me, is that he was like, when everybody's answering the same way, the message is the same, right? They're all on the same page. And, you know, it doesn't mean that it's going to be that way forever. We've talked about this before. One of the reasons the Lions have, you know, been able to have that success and move on up as they have is because of actually winning. So that's kind of the next step.
Yes.
In this evolution is that the culture, and it seems like everything is positive, and, you know, as they say, the vibes are immaculate, but they also have to start winning.
Yes, that is the next step. So the message is on point. If they progress and win more games, you keep that buy-in. This was a truly, different offseason because there were no problems. The Cardinals had no distractions this offseason. This is the first time in years we haven't had distractions with the offseason. And that is because it is a coaching staff that preaches a message of unity and teamwork. They were competitive. They had late success. And there's progress. There's hope because Kyler Murray's coming back for a full year. So everyone's bought in. So even when a James Conner is in a contract year, Buda Baker's in a contract year, and a year after he held out wanting a new contract, there's no problems. And yeah, that is the next step. They've got to, this team needs to be a playoff contend. They don't have to make the playoffs, but they need to be a playoff contender late in the year to keep that train going.
Right. And you know, like you said, that's kind of the next step in the evolution of everything. And can they get there, and will they get there? And like you said, having a MVP run, you know, being, like you said, a dark horse candidate, but having a run as an MVP candidate will absolutely put that in motion, right? Like, all of a sudden now you're like, oh, this is legit. Like, this is happening. So we'll see. I mean, you know, everything's in this instance, in this time frame where everything is at, everything is good. But like we said, it now becomes, you have to start performing, and it has to start becoming a situation where this is occurring and you're seeing the positives come out in terms of now winning games.
Yeah, and if we look at this list of eight players, kind of run down it, you've got Jared Goff, you've got Tyreek Hill, you've got Christian McCaffrey, Kyler Murray, Micah Parsons, CJ Stroud, Tua Tagovailoa, and then a bonus pick of Jordan Love, quarterback for the Packers. You know, of all those guys, I'm going to, you know, Micah Parsons, forget that, he's a defensive player. Defensive players don't win MVP. Wide receivers don't win MVP, so Tyreek Hill, it would take a lot. And here's the thing. If Tyreek Hill were good enough to be an MVP candidate, wouldn't it be really hard not to say that it's Tua?
Right. And that's just what it becomes, right? Like, you know, at the end of the day, same, Christian McCaffrey would have to put up close to 20.
Running backs can do it.
But he'd have to put up close to 2,500 yards from scrimmage.
Yeah.
And like over 20 touchdowns. Like, we're talking historically great numbers, which he's already done and didn't win. So the other instance of that, or I guess the other side to the coin, is unless there's not a dominant quarterback play this year, right? Like, unless there's not one quarterback that makes everybody else seem, because that, I mean, if you look at last year, and this, again, not to go back and pick on Lamar Jackson, but like, you wouldn't look at what Lamar did last year and go, oh, definitely, like, hands down MVP, right? Like, you'd look at it and be like, hey, had a really good season. And then when you're like, oh, he won MVP, it was almost unanimous, you'd be like, oh, did not see that coming from what I, you know, again, basic statistics.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of where it all comes together, is now it's how do we do both, right? Like, how do we have the Cardinals contending? How do you have Kyler in the MVP race? And they kind of coincide. Like, the only way Kyler's in the MVP race is if the Cardinals are in contention. I mean, because that's the first thing, right? Like,
yeah, you have to be leading a winning team, and you
right.
have to be putting up numbers, which, yeah, we'll talk about in kind of the next thing. This offense, like, maybe not from the outside, but you look at, like, this could be a really good offense.
Right. And I think it was in that article. Oh, we'll talk about it next.
Let's do that. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about our next segment, which will then, of course, be about the offense. Kyler thinks it can be a top one. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. Kyler Murray, the one time that he spoke to reporters this year and this offseason, one of the quotes that came out, that, like, he believes that this could be a top offense or the top offense in the NFL. And let's be honest, that's high expectations. That's really, really, let's put lofty expectations. But then if you think about it, because the last eight games of the season, you talked about on a previous show, so you look at analytics and metrics, that this was a top 10 offensive unit over the last half of the season with Kyler back in the lineup when they were getting virtually nothing from the wide receiver position. The offense was quite literally James Conner and Trey McBride. You get Conner back in an offense that running happens, and they've got depth at the running back position. You've still got Trey McBride. You have an offensive line that questions, but you expect it to be an above average unit at least. And then you add Marvin Harrison Jr. You get year two of Michael Wilson. You elevate Greg Dortchin to the conversation, and you add a guy like Zay Jones. Add to that some promise of, we're not saying he's going to big season, but Elijah Higgins as a second tight end. There are the pieces are in place for this to be a very efficient offense. When you think top offense, you're thinking, oh, could they score 35 points a game? With an offense where you run the ball as well as they do, I don't know if you're going to get that, but I could totally see them being one of the most efficient offseason offenses in the NFL, especially if Kyler continues on his trajectory. One, is healthy, and two, you know, the way he played in the final three games, finally knowing the offense, if that's the play that we get from him consistently throughout the year, this offense is not going to be the problem.
No, and you look at it, I mean, the last four games of the season, they averaged 25 points a game, which, you know, is about 6 points a game over their season average. So, again, they were trending in the right direction for that. And then you look at a couple other things. One, they had the number one offense in terms of yards in the final four games. Now, I did the work so you didn't have to. A couple days ago, and most people say, okay, well, who did they play, right? Like, does that actually matter? So the Niners were eighth in yards and third in scoring. You know, obviously they lost that game, but they scored 29 points, had 436 yards of total offense. The Chicago Bears were 12th in yards, so still, you know, top 15, top half of the league, but 20th in scoring. They scored only 16, had 306 yards of total offense. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles, who were abysmal defensively last year, you know, but Jonathan Gannon was the problem in Philadelphia. and 26th in yards, 30th in scoring, and then they, you know, again, as we know, lost to the Seahawks on two missed field goals by Matt Prater, who, you know, good job, Matt. I guess
it was part of the script. We say it is, although, like, I hope that, because that was the first game-winning field goal in the final 2 minutes of a game that Matt Prater has missed in his entire career.
And so, you know, and the Seahawks, again, defensively were not good last year, so we'll see if that's something. But, you know, they're 30th in yards, 25th in scoring. And they put up only 20 points but 466 yards of offense. So, again, I mean, the number one yardage offense in the NFL over the last four games, And like you said, that back half of the season, they were top 10 in efficiency. This is a team that is trending in the right direction. Now, it all matters if you do it for 17-plus games, right? Like, and obviously, they're not going to have every game be great. But if your bad games are Chicago, where you're talking about 306 yards of total offense and 16 points, then that's okay, because you go back, right, to last year, 58 yards. We'll throw out the Cleveland game, but they had 6 games under 300 yards of total offense, which is not good. You know, they had a number of games less than 20 points, which is not great. So that's what it's got to be this year, is that you can have those two, you know, one to two of those games, but you can't have a third of the season's worth of those games.
Yeah. And the truth of the matter is that as good an offense you have, you also need at least a tolerable level of defense. Right.
I was going to say a semblance of talent along
last year's defense was atrocious. It was the league's worst, arguably. The upgrades that they've made should make it at worst a below average defense, and to have it for a good offensive unit, because if you have an atrocious defense, it makes it so very hard to be good offensively. Because you do press, he's like, I have to be the hero. I have to be the hero. I have to make, like, and that's one of the, honestly, that has been one of the things about Kyler Murray's career that has held him back, is the fact that the one thing he does do, he sometimes tries to do too much because there's no other option. you can't trust an 18 play drive. And so he's like, I've got to make something happen. And sometimes those throws that he makes, the ones that get picked off, you're like, welp, that he shouldn't have made that throw.
Yeah, and that's what the key is becoming, right, is that they have to find sustainability, efficiency, as you talked about earlier. Like, all of these things have to be a key to the growth and success of this team, because if not, then, like you said, it's going to be one of those seasons where, you know, you mentioned it, you could see a lot of positives and then also see a 6-win team.
Yeah. But if you're talking about top offense, like, you look at some of the offenses around the league, and like, that's like, you look at San Francisco. San Francisco has an offense that, like, it's, if they're playing well, it's hard to stop because they run the ball so well. They get efficient quarterback play. They've got great receivers. So San Francisco, you're talking about that. You look at Lamar Jackson and their offense. You look at the Chiefs, and this year they have an improved receiving core this year. And it's not just Travis Kelce and Isaiah Pacheco. They don't have to rely only on him. There are a number of really good offensive units, and if the Cardinals can be near the top of that would be a fantastic thing, because, you know, you go from a promising offense to being a very good offense, and then you go from being an atrocious defense to it's a tolerable defense. The Cardinals are going to be in a position to win a lot of games this next year, and that's what we want. That's what we hope. It's what we expect. That's what we believe is going to happen.
Right, and that's the hope for this whole thing, is that they continue to get better and. I would say a top 12 offense would be ideal next year. And then in year three with the growth and everything of Marvin and Kyler and the offense and things like that, now all of a sudden you're looking at offense that falls into the top, 10 to 8. And that needs to be where you live for the rest of that time in that career.
Coming up next on the Rise of Zero podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk a little bit about training camp, as the Cardinals have released some details about that. That's coming up next on Rise of Zero. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. We have training camp information. Not only do we know when the Cardinals will report for training camp, and that is July 23rd, we also have the training camp schedule. Nothing surprising about this in terms of training camp, except, and you've got a total of nine, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine open practices, and those will all come before, so they only have the one home preseason game, and starts at Thursday, July 25th, and ends on Wednesday, August 7th. There are, there's the one wrinkle this year, and all of them are afternoon. So, you know, some remember the days of having like 8:15 or 9 o'clock in the morning training camp practice. I know there are reasons for that, but this is, you know, this is like it's always been. It's free, parking is free. We are in the age of digital tickets. You can't just walk in, and so you do have to reserve tickets for that, but they are free, and they have the red and white practice. That's on Saturday, August 3rd. But there is a new wrinkle that's kind of interesting, and that is a season ticket only, season ticket holder only practice on the first weekend. And so they will practice Thursday and Friday. There will be no practice that first Saturday. It's a bummer for me because the days that I can make it out to training camp once, you know, school starts are Saturdays and Sundays. And so there will be just the Saturday red and white practice the next weekend. And then I'm assuming that media members will be able to attend the season ticket holder only practice on Sunday, July 28th. But that's an interesting thing. The back together weekend, that's something that the NFL has had as an initiative the last few seasons. Only this time, and I haven't looked at it for the teams, the fact that the Cardinals are making it season ticket holder only, I think it's kind of a neat, and it's a bummer, but also it just adds a little bit to the value of being a season ticket holder.
Yeah, I gotta unmute sometimes. yeah, in this age, it is, you know, incentivizing owning the ticket, right? And it's incentivizing being a season ticket holder, because then all of a sudden you are the guy that they have, the guy or gal, obviously, that they have to go to get the ticket. And then you get a little bit of perks, like you said, every once in a while. So, yeah, I mean, basic training camp, other than, like you said, the times, which is nice. You know, but for the most part, I mean, it's pretty standard, and we'll get some things. Now, I think the bigger thing was they moved to what, My3 TV CBS for all their
for the preseason games. Yes.
Yeah. Preseason games. So that'll be the bigger thing. Cause you know, I think they've been on NBC the last couple years.
They were on
Channel
12 for like the past few years, and then Now you get a change of network. Not that that matters a whole lot, other than it's cool for guys we know in the business is basically it. It's cool for the guys in the business that we know that work at those networks.
Yeah. So, I mean, but yeah, training camp should be fun this year. It should be interesting. There's a lot that we're not going to see because we know how Jonathan Gannon and them do things, but that's, you know, at least it's as the countdown starts to the start of training camp, it gives us something to look forward to.
Yes, and the one question I have is that since that's considered a closed practice, that season ticket holder practice on that first Sunday, whether the Cardinals will treat that as a closed practice that media members are not able to report on. That's basically it for me. I'm like, that's right. My only question, because being open to the public, like we can talk about everything that's on the field, but if they limit it to season ticket holders only, they might be able to say, no, this is not an open practice, so you can't talk about it.
Yep. So,
how are you going to try? Are you going to think you're going to make it out to any practice this year, Seth?
Probably not, just with all the extra coaching and responsibility this year. But maybe a weekend one, I'll be able to make it out to.
And let me see. You'll probably have a correspondent or two out there once or twice to give you. But whether or not you get Seth, I'll be out there for one of, I'm sure, Howard Balzer. My co-editor here at Cards Wire will also be out there. So there will be plenty of updates that we can get from what's coming out of training camp. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Again, I'll have another show with Howard later this week. And after that, it's going to be touch and go. I know that I will be starting to record sometime soon the opponent preview series. So we've got 14 of those that we'll be doing. And other than that, unless something comes up in news, I think Seth might be on a little bit of a break here from the show. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Thanks always for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!